Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. We are in post-President's Cup mode, looking forward to 2020. And we've got not first time, but definitely a long time, Sean Martin. How's it going?
Always happy to be back. Just getting my sleep schedule back on track after the President's Cup. It's funny how you can get jet lag, not even traveling there, but it's good.
You sound very like reserved. Were you disappointed at the result of the President's Cup, rooting for the international team?
I think it was second best case scenario. I think an international upset would have been very good for the competition, obviously. But I also think that at the end of the day, I do think the better team won. And the internationals led the whole way. They made it interesting. They were a cool team to root for, kind of the plucky underdogs. You know, you had like Abe Anser showing a lot of just kind of bravado. He's obviously an undersized player, not the longest hitter. They were like the plucky underdogs. It's probably like, you know, like the NCAA basketball final, like if you had Duke versus VCU and, you know, VCU leads with 10 minutes left and then Duke just finally outclasses them with Grayson Allen or Christian Laettner or just names Grant Hill, name someone else. But yeah, that's what I compare it to.
I love that you go Grayson Allen off the top. Who's the Grayson Allen of USA Golf?
I don't know enough. My basketball references stop there. I'd probably make a comparison not knowing what the underlying themes were, and then I'd get myself in trouble.
I feel like we're not giving the international – we're not going to talk President's Cup. I don't know why we are. We're just getting into it. But I feel like the international –
we're talking about it because it was awesome. It was great. It was cool. The late night thing. You know, most of us, our loved ones are asleep, so like golf Twitter was our family that week. Yeah. And there were family feuds, there were touching moments, there were shared moments. I mean, we had like golf Twitter was our family for the week, and we experienced all the emotions you share with your own family.
It was kind of Open Championship like is what it felt like. It was different timing sort of, but it was very similar to that week, which is probably my favorite week of the year.
Yeah, but even then, you're kind of still – people should be at work or should be working. For most people, like, this was middle of the night. Your whole house is dark because your kids are asleep. Like, the volume's on low. Like, you're laughing at the jokes on Twitter, but you're kind of keeping it down because you want to wake the kids up. Like, it had a much more, like, hardcore feel because you were up to, like, midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. watching this thing if you were watching from start to finish.
Yeah, I was up till 3 on Friday night. That was the toughest one.
I told my coworkers they were on their own. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm out.
Okay, before we get to what we're actually going to talk about, is Hideki okay? Is he doing okay after the event?
Oh, that was not good.
Is he feeling okay?
This is a great moment for him, I thought. Like, it's a great golf course for him. It demands precise iron play. He had some flashes where – you know, he really looked like he was going to be that international stalwart they needed. It was a course that rewards his greatest asset. And in reality, when you look at it, you know, if he wins that match, they tie the cup. And really, if he wins that match, they still have a much better chance of winning it, obviously. And I think really him losing that was kind of when you first started to sense like – I mean, the U.S. was making a move early, but then – when that happened, you're like, oh, like this is – they're going to wax them now. This is – it's on. I'm not okay.
Sure.
So he's probably not okay.
It's going to be a tough winter for you guys. But speaking of, we're going into 2020. New calendar year starts here in a couple of weeks at the Tournament of Champions. And I wanted to talk today. So we're doing this thing. We got 20 guys for 2020. So we got 20 players to keep an eye on. And these are not – your regular PGA Tour superstars, not, I mean, there are going to be some big names in here, but not your Rorys and your Koepkas. We want to look at some names, like 20 names to kind of keep an eye on going into this new year that maybe are a little bit beneath the surface or a little deeper dive. So we're going to start with the young guns. And I said we're going to do 20 names that people maybe haven't heard of or don't think about. And we're going to start with one that they actually do think about and have heard of. And that's Matthew Wolf. What are your expectations for Matthew Wolf going into 2020?
I think I've heard comparisons of Wolf being like a young Dustin Johnson, where he's got the raw physical tools, but he still needs some polishing. And so I think we've seen that, like the 3M Open, he was dominant. It was a great course for him. You know, he's able to hit these really high long irons that are a great asset on, you know, obviously par fives and long par fours. And that's a skill that can really separate you from your competition. But the stuff, you know, like partial wedge shots and the stuff that kind of separates a refined professional from a good college player are things that he still needs to work on. So, you know, I think you could see kind of like early in DJ's career, he won in his first season, Matthew Wolf's won already, where there will be some bright spots. There'll be a lot of promise shown very quickly, but he might not hit his full stride until, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road when he's had a chance to kind of polish those things. So, you know, wouldn't be surprised if he won again. Also wouldn't be surprised if he didn't. I think he's a guy that we just need to take the long view of, which is hard to do with a guy who won his fourth start as a professional. You want everything now, now, now. But I do think that his best golf is a few years away, and so should get a little patience because of that.
Yeah, for sure. This is a crazy stat. He actually hasn't played in a major championship yet, and his first one will be at the Masters in 2020. So that'll be fun to kind of see him there. I love the DJ comparison. I think it's really smart. And I think taking the long view with all these guys, but especially him, because it's almost like the Ricky thing, right? Not to go to Oklahoma State on this, but you win early and it's like, oh, he's going to win all the time, you know, probably win 50 times. And you're like, well, probably not. Like, that's probably not how this thing is going to go. So I'm with you. I hope people just are patient. He's not going to win 5 times a year. He's going to be a good player for a really long time on the PGA Tour, though. Next up, we got your boy, Colin Morikawa. So Colin Morikawa got his PGA Tour card for this next season after winning the Barracuda. He played in the U.S. Open this summer. He finished T35 at Pebble. Expectations for him, I think we talk about Wolf, Victor Hovland, and Morikawa in the same kind of the triumvirate of guys that came on tour last year. How does he fit into that group for you?
I think it is kind of funny because they each have very different skill sets. And if you look, like Wolf is one end of the spectrum, you know, absolutely bombs it. Great iron player. He can kind of bludgeon some courses, which is what he did at the 3M Open. Morikawa, a little bit different, very refined player, very like artistic with his irons, probably already one of the best iron players on tour, but may lack some of the length that's necessary to be kind of a dominant player. And then Victor Hovland is kind of right in the middle of the two. People have compared him as kind of a combo of the two, of having that more refined game, if you will, and not quite the distance of Wolf, but definitely longer than Morikawa. So, you know, iron play, as we've seen, is probably the most important part of the game to be a successful tour player, as long as you have a requisite amount of length, and he does, but he may not have the length to be like a Rory McIlroy per se, or an absolutely dominant player, but a very good PGA Tour player who, you know, when he's in the fairway, just has a chance to separate himself from the competition with really good iron play. I mean, he didn't have enough rounds for the stats, but he was basically at or near the top of like every iron play and approach stat that you could think of.
Yeah. Yeah. He was really impressive. All of these guys were. And I'm curious. So our next guy is Hovland. And I think that, you know, I think he's probably a lock for rookie of the year. It's weird. It's crazy that he's a rookie considering how many events. I mean, he played in the Masters last year, played in the USO. He played so many events last year. And you're like, wait, this guy's still a rookie. But he will be going into, or he is right now for the 2019-20 season. I heard you say that he's not quite as long as Matthew Wolf, but the statistics tell me that he's much better in terms of strokes gained off the tee. And so I guess I'm curious, if you have to take one of those guys' driving game, are you taking Wolf or are you taking Hovland?
I would probably take Hovland. I think you get a little bit, you don't have quite the big miss. You know, we saw it's going to be a very random reference, but at the Wyndham, Matthew Wolf was really working his way into competition and then hit one OB. And I think you might occasionally have that foul ball. I just think that, you know, the way people look at, like, if you look at a prospect angle, like the ceiling of Wolf's off the tee game is probably much, is probably higher. I wouldn't say much higher, but probably higher. But the floor of Hovland's is much, is not as low. And so I think with Hovland, you're just getting a much steadier player. Whereas Wolf, you'll get some weeks where he's just going to blow guys out of the water. But then other weeks, you know, well, obviously he doesn't. And where maybe, you know, there might be some bigger misses.
Yeah, for sure. I would go Hovland. Man, his, the strokes gain stuff off the tee, I know we've talked about this. It is astonishing. And I think it just works in 2020 on the PGA Tour. We can have a conversation about whether that's a good thing for golf, whether that's like, you know, whatever, but it doesn't matter. Like, he's elite at the thing that you need to be elite at to be successful on the PGA Tour. And I just, I said this, it hasn't come out yet, but I was on the No Laying Up podcast the other day, and I was telling them about how you were hollering throughout their college careers about how, like, look, Wolf is, I don't know if he's as good, or excuse me, Hovland, I don't know if he's as good as Wolf, but he's scoring with him. He's finishing the same. And then they get on tour and you're like, there's not a big difference between these guys. And I think that's sort of played out so far.
Yeah. And I do think with Wolf, I think, you know, a lot of what we think of is like how long he is stuff posted on Instagram of like him and Gank just messing around and him just killing it. But I do think when he's actually playing in tour events, he's not going 100% full bore. So like, yes, he's capable of flying at 340, when he's playing around and just messing around with George Gankis, or, you know, even like a place like Phoenix where you can kind of do that. But I do think for the most part, I think he's kind of dialing it back when he's playing tour events, which is a sign of maturity too.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Next name on the list. We've got, again, I promise we'll get to names that people haven't heard of, but we got Jon Rahm, the number three player in the world. He won three times on the European Tour in 2019. I thought he was the best player in the world for the second half of 2019. He's 25 years old, just turned 25 in November. And, what's the ceiling for him? Can he be number one for multiple years? Is he going to get to number one this year? What are your expectations for him going into this season or into this calendar
year? Yeah, I do wonder. Obviously, end of the decade content has been very popular in the last 2 months. Everyone's kind of gotten their share of it. And then obviously we're doing looking into sort of the next year, but also the next decade. And so I was kind of starting to think, like, what does the next decade look like? You know, you'll have some carryover of names we're familiar with, and then you'll obviously have some new names. But, like, who is our player of the decade? And probably it's just recency bias, but I do wonder, like, Jon Rahm is in a great position where this could be, like, he could be the player of the next decade. He's only, I think, 25, so he'll be 35 when it's over. Like, I mean, JT is another prime candidate, but, I mean, I really think Jon Rahm potentially could be the player of the next decade, which is a pretty heady statement.
Yeah, who are even your other, your candidates? I guess some of the guys that we mentioned earlier, JT would probably be my pick, just because I mean, him and Rahm, I think, are similar in that I don't know where the holes are at. Like, you look at some of JT's numbers and you're like, what's he bad at? You know, like, he's not the best in the world at anything, but he's like top 20 at everything. And I think a little bit the same about Rahm. You know, I think that it's just incredible that I think this about DJ. I think it about Brooks Koepka, to be that big and that violent with your swing, and yet have that good of hands. It's remarkable to me. And I think he kind of epitomizes that. And he's just so impressive. I just think his stuff around the greens and with his putter is so impressive, because, you know, a lot of guys can hit it like he does, but there's not a lot of guys that can couple the putting and the wedge play around the greens like him.
Yeah. And I mean, he's been on a just absolute tear to end this year. I was looking since the U.S. Open, 13 starts, one missed cut. Other than that, out of the other 12 starts, his worst finish is T13, and he's got eight top three finishes in those 13 starts, including, you know, he won race to Dubai, He won the Irish Open, which is a huge event. And then he won his national open, the Spanish Open, which honestly, that's always hard when you're obviously the best player in the field and everyone's expecting you to win. And then to go over there and do it is a sign of a dominant player as well. So the crazy thing too, when we were doing this, you know, best of the decade stuff was how many of the guys like JT and Spieth were still in high school when the decade started, and guys like Brooks were in college when the decade started. And just, so that means that like, you know, for next 2020s, there's kids we aren't even thinking about who are going to be, you know, absolute stars in like 5 years.
Probably our kids could be like talked about in that conversation for best of the decade.
Mine will be like 12, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, mine will be 15. He'll probably play in a couple U.S. Opens by then. U.S. amateur. Speaking of, what a segue. I didn't even realize I was doing this. Cole Hammer. Okay. This is your section. This is the Sean Martin special. Cole Hammer. So we're going to go amateurs now. We've got three or four amateurs on here that we want to talk about in terms of 20 players for 2020. Cole Hammer is the number two amateur in the world right now. Played in the Houston Open earlier this fall, shot a 67 in the first round, Walker Cup. He played in a U.S. Open at Chambers Bay when he was 15. He's done everything as an amateur. I look at him, and I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, can he does he have – like the power and the strength and the stuff that it takes on the PGA Tour in this era in 2020 to be elite. What's your take just on like where he stands at Texas and him going into professional golf over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's very much in the Spieth mold, which, I mean, Spieth made it work, but he's in that mold of, you know, not the biggest guy. He's going to have to get it done with his putter. He's going to have to rely on obviously not just strength off the tee. And so I think there is, you know, there's probably some limitations there or some, you know, his ceiling may not be as high, but it's not often that you see, you know, kids who qualify for US Open at like 15, 16, there's been a handful and really not many of them, if any, have panned out. So, I mean, obviously he hasn't done anything as a professional yet, but he's gotten to number one in the amateur rankings in the past. And so, it does make you wonder if there is something there. I mean, to this point, he's been able to overcome kind of a lack of distance. He won the Western Amateur, which is a huge event. So I do think there's a ceiling on him just because of the size. You know, it's unfortunate probably that you say that, but there is truth to it in today's game of you can only do so much when you can't hit it up there with, you know, the best players in the world as far as length. And so I do think that might give a little pause to his future prospects.
Yeah, I really like him. I think he's got a ton of game. I think he's got the right attitude, like the right amount of kind of, I don't know, to use your Abraham Answer term, bravado or cockiness or whatever. Like he just, I think he gets it. I think he understands like what it takes and stuff, but I'm curious just to see. Yeah. I mean, it's just such a power game. And so I'm curious, is it a, you know, is he more in contention on shorter courses? Is it a, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. But it's not, I don't know. Sometimes we talk about these guys, like they hit it like 230. That's not how it is. Like Jordan Spieth does, he's like 294 off the tee. Like it's not like Cole Hammer has plenty of game. I just, to be at that elite level, that's why I'm so high on Hovland. I think I keep going back to just his ability off the tee. So, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. Next up, we got the 2019 U.S. Amateur Champion, Georgia Tech guy, Andy Ogletree. He is going to be in the 2020 Masters after winning the 2019 USAM. What's your take on him? He was a little bit of a, I don't know, kind of an out-of-nowhere winner of the USAM. What are your thoughts on him going into 2020?
Yeah, he was a guy who hadn't done a whole lot in his college career, and then kind of halfway through this past season, fixed some stuff in his putting and kind of really turned around from there. He was a second team All-American, so a good player because of a really strong finish to his season after he kind of got his putting sorted out. He's a guy from like a small town in Mississippi. So anyways, I think just that he was a little bit of a surprise, but maybe not too deep of a surprise. Just a guy who, you know, he'd finally figured some stuff out and reached that next level and kind of they kind of capitalize or kind of reach its crescendo at the U.S. Amateur. You know, that being said, I think, you know, Victor Hovland obviously has had a great career after the U.S. Amateur. The the track record of U.S. amateur champions is not the greatest. It's not the best. And I think part of that's just because it is just one tournament. So, you know, anyone can win one event. It is match play, so it's not maybe necessarily the best determinant of who's going to do well in professional golf, where everything is stroke play. So, I don't know. He obviously a good player, second team All American. Plenty of guys have had good college careers after, you know, being second team All Americans. But it is kind of a wait and see if that was just maybe a hot streak at the later part of 2019, or if this is, you know, something more to come.
Yeah, he's from Little Rock, Mississippi. Not Little Rock, Arkansas, but Little Rock, Mississippi, which sounds like the smallest town possible. Is he was a senior last year, right? So he's just basically just waiting until after the Masters to turn pro.
Yeah, and then with that new rule, he can turn pro and play the US Open as a pro. So it's probably once his college season finishes out, he'll turn pro.
Which is great, right? Like are you in favor of that new rule?
I don't know. I think I said this on another podcast, and you know, one of the bigger mistakes that is made is guys turning pro too early. No one's ever said, it's kind of like returning from injury. No one's ever said they return from injury too late. No one's ever said they turn pro too late, I don't think. And so just anything else that further encourages guys to turn pro after, you know, one win, that's a tough one. I don't know. I think you could lead to guys turning pro maybe when they shouldn't.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I guess we'll see how it plays out. But speaking of the USAM, John Augenstein was the US Amateur runner-up. He is a Vanderbilt guy. He's a senior this year as well. Any thoughts on his kind of potential going into 2020?
Maybe fair or not, but all these Vanderbilt guys kind of run together for me. They're all just kind of these they've got a lot of kind of that bravado. They're big hitters, hard swingers, and Augenstein kind of seemed to fit that bill as well. And, you know, we saw Theo Humphrey, one of his teammates who did well at the USAM a couple of years ago, just get through Korn Ferry Q School. And so I think that it'll be interesting. I think he's a big hitter with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, his his bio on the Vanderbilt Golf website says it's only got two bullet points for summer 2019. One is finished runner-up at the U.S. Amateur at Pinehurst, and the second bullet point is help the U.S. to a Walker Cup win at Hoylake and clinch the match for the U.S. at Royal Liverpool with his 4-3 win over Thomas Plum. So pretty decent summer for John Augenstein.
Definitely.
Okay, last up. I'm going to just give you the floor for this one.
This is my boy.
The number one amateur in the world. You can tell me if I'm saying this correctly or not. Takumi Kanaya.
Nailed it. He's also actually 225th in the official world golf ranking.
Here we go.
He's ranked ahead of Jimmy Walker and Jason Duffner, guys who won majors this decade, which is not a knock on them. It's just a credit to Takumi.
You're all about the decade stuff.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying there are guys that won majors recently, and Takumi is just, you know, sprinted ahead of them. But he almost he contended the Australian Open just a couple weeks ago. He won a big event on the Japan Tour. He's won an Asia Pacific Amateur. He almost won this year's. He lost in a playoff. He played in the Masters this year, shot 68 in the third round, just like Hideki did in his first Masters. Goes to the same school, Tohoku Fukushi University, that Hideki did. The parallels are just, I mean, they're uncanny. So I expect big things from Takumi.
Is Hideki the bar? I mean, in terms of like, is that what everybody from that, like from Japan is like, I want to be, like, do they say, I want to be Hideki? I want Hideki's career. Is that sort of the, like what people are shooting for?
Yeah. I mean, I think as far as performance in America, Hideki's the greatest Japanese player of all time. I think probably Jumbo Ozaki is the most revered in Japan, but as far as performance in America, I mean, Hideki's the guy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll leave the Takumi Kanaya takes with you. I don't know that I have a lot there. Number one amateur in the world is pretty impressive.
I do have a couple. We're doing the best amateurs or best players to look for next decade. I did want to throw in Preston Summerhays, the U.S. Junior champion. Very good young player to look for. And also one more, Michael Thorbjornsson, won the U.S. Junior the year before him and then made the cut at the U.S. Open. This year at Pebble, two guys I think that are worth just kind of keeping an eye on as they kind of go through the junior and soon the college ranks.
Where does Preston Summerhays go, or where is he going?
He's verbal to Arizona State. He's the son of Boyd Summerhays, who's Tony Finau's swing coach. Won the U.S. Junior last year. He shot 65-60 to qualify for the U.S. Amateur. So pretty crazy to shoot those numbers at like 16 years old.
I think I read about this. This is like the Daniel Summerhays family.
Yeah. Daniel Summerhays is his uncle.
Yeah. I did read about it. Where did I read about that? Was it on Golf Week?
I don't know. I wrote a story on him as well, just because he played in the Junior President's Cup, and obviously Finau is in the President's Cup. But so it's always nice when your dad is a former tour player and a swing coach. And the ability to kind of go that low and shoot like 60 when you're 16 is pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's disgusting. That's filthy. Yeah. Okay. We're going to get to some more. Actually, let's do this. We've got eight guys down. Let's do two more and get halfway there. So we're going to go into the international team rookies that we just saw at the President's Cup. And these are some guys that maybe people were just introduced to, but you've been following, I've been following for a little bit longer. So I'm curious about your thoughts on maybe the ceiling for Joaquin Niemann. You know, he's somebody who is coming off a win at the Greenbrier in the fall. You know, he didn't have the greatest President's Cup, but he's kind of been around for a while, kind of low-key played a lot of PGA Tour events after turning pro a couple years ago after the Masters. How are you feeling about him going into 2020?
Yeah, we're almost downplaying him because he's not American. I mean, he won on the PGA Tour at age 20, and, you know, maybe it felt less impressive because he'd already been out there for like a year and a half, and so he almost felt like old news. But, I mean, he won on the PGA Tour at the age of 20, which is an incredible achievement. I was like the only two players in the last, like, basically since World War II, the only two players to win on tour who were born outside the United States before their 21st birthday. It was Rory McIlroy, Seve Ballesteros, and now Joaquin Niemann. So, I mean, sick. Not to say that he's going to have those careers, but that's good company. And I think, yeah, I don't think he gets the credit that he deserves for, you know, winning at that young of an age.
Yeah, I agree. And I think for me with him, I go to the strokes gained tee to green stuff, and it's really good. It's not fake. Like, you can't fake that stuff. And it wasn't a fake win at Greenbrier. He's the real deal, and his speed is just, I don't know, it's crazy. Like, he's really, you know, he's not built like Rahm or Koepka or anything like that, but he is, I mean, his swing speed is super impressive, and I think he's going to have an awesome career. I think he's going to be really, really good. Okay, we'll do number 10, and then we'll go to a break. Abe, Father Abraham, Honest Abe, Abraham Answer.
The Answer.
Shout out to Allen Iverson. Showed out at the Players earlier this year. He was really good for a long time at the Players. Kind of faded late, finished T12, I believe. And then had probably I don't know if it was the most impressive. I think we'll get to the most impressive here in a minute. But maybe the biggest, maybe, he might have been the biggest revelation at the President's Cup. What do you feel about him going into 2020?
This is a guy, we were talking about distance, but a guy, I mean, he does get hurt by lack of length, you know, so he's 10th in strokes gained off the tee, though, which usually that high in the rankings, that's dominated by bombers, but he's 103rd in driving distance last season, which, again, like you were saying, is still hitting it pretty far. That's still 293 off the tee, but 10th in driving accuracy. So he's a guy who, you know, he's not hitting it as far as the top players, but he does kind of, he's got this grittiness that I really like, and it's the kind of story that you don't see a lot on the PGA Tour. Like, he grew up playing golf in Mexico, right on the U.S. border, and basically it became too violent in his hometown to drive to the golf course every day to practice. So they moved across the border to Texas, was down in kind of southeast Texas, not really getting a lot of attention from colleges. So he goes to Odessa Junior College, and he's actually the National Player of the Year there in his first year. His coach said he showed up with like mismatched golf clubs, like, you know, all the other kids on college teams are, you know, they're all getting fit for sets and getting custom fit, and he just kind of had whatever he was able to kind of put together. The Oklahoma coach said that he saw him, basically he was there to recruit someone else, and, you know, it's like rainy and cold, and Abraham just shoots this 65 in these awful conditions, and he's just showed kind of, I think, that same grit that we've seen now. And so, you know, you don't see a lot of guys even who go to junior colleges make it on the PGA Tour, it's usually a lot of guys who we've known about since, you know, they were in college or their junior golf days. But he's a guy who gets it done. He's very competitive, very gritty.
I love that we talk about 293 off the tee being like not being short.
Right. And the same thing with Morikawa. I mean, that's I think about how far he hits it. He hits it plenty far. I think the difference is it's not that like ability to hit it that 330 gear where you're just playing a different golf course than everyone else. Most people on the PGA Tour hit it between 285 to 295. You're not like you're, you know, lagging way behind your competition, but there are those guys who have that next gear where they're basically playing a different golf course than everyone else.
Yeah, so I'm back at so I'm looking at the 2000 driving distance on PGAtour.com. Shout out to your employer. 293 would have ranked let's see, what is it? Oh no, I'm in 2001. 293 would have ranked 7th. So your 2001 PGA Tour driving distance leaders, John Daly at 307, Brett Quigley at this is so fun. Brett Quigley at 299. Tiger 298, Davis Love 298, Duval 296, and then Phil and Charles Howell at 294. And so Abraham Ancer, if he was playing in 2001, would have ranked 7th on the PGA Tour in driving distance.
Yeah, it's a different game. I mean, that's all there really is to say about it.
Chris Tiblin, 16th.
Whew, go Pokes.
Yeah, Joey Sindelar. Okay, we need to stop. Okay, let's take a break. We're halfway through, and let's hear a word from our partners.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Okay, Sean, let's pick this back up with three other President's Cup rookies that we just saw at Royal Melbourne. Cam Smith, he's going for his third consecutive Australian PGA title this week, which is pretty crazy. He's somebody who's also been around for a few years, and I think that, I don't know, he doesn't get talked about ever by anybody other
he's
than like
us. So he's the Australian Walter Hagen.
Did Walter Hagen win three PGAs in a row?
He won five. I think he won a few in a row as well. But yeah. Anyways, that.
But he. Why does he not get talked about?
I think he's a guy who, I mean, his strength is in his short game, and we saw it at Royal Melbourne. I mean, he chips and putts it like a fiend. But I think there is, and he's done some good things in majors. Chambers Bay, remember he eagled the last, like stiffed it to finish fourth.
Yeah.
The Masters 1 year, he shot like 65 in the final round to move up the board and I think finish top 10. But I do think, I mean, his main strength is around the greens. And I think I haven't seen him a ton, but I think there is just maybe doesn't quite have the ball striking chops to really contend week in, week out. I think that's really what holds him back.
Yeah. The one at Chambers Bay, didn't that earn him his card or something?
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
Got him his card for the next year on the PGA Tour. I remember that was like a weird, like, Sunday, like, sub storyline. That was the first major that I covered in person. And obviously you had the DJ Spieth stuff. Rory, like, went out in like 28. Louis shot like a 29 on the back nine. I mean, it was a crazy Sunday, and that was like the sixth storyline, but it was super impressive. Okay, Sung J.M., the best player in the world other than like Rory and Tiger and Brooks. I think he's like the fourth best player in the world right now. What? How high can? So No Laying Up tweeted that he could earn $50 million on the PGA Tour. Is that an over-exaggeration or an under-exaggeration?
Gosh. 50. I mean, he's 21. He plays every week. It still feels high, but... Gosh, I don't know. That feels high. That's 10 years of, I mean, he could be on the tour for 30 years, which that'd only be like, you know, 1.5 million more than that a year, which is like, not, I mean, you make 1.5 million almost if you keep your card. So it's definitely very possible. You have to wonder about, like, I just think with guys this young, you always have to wonder about burnout is always a thing. And just, a lot can happen over the next 30 years, but I mean, yeah, it's probably very doable.
He was awesome at the President's Cup. I just, you know, some of the, you know, he's one of two guys to win a singles match on Sunday, and just some of the emotion he showed. I walked into the President's Cup like loving Sungjae, and I walked away from it somehow loving him even more. I thought he was just so good. And he doesn't get talked about, and I'm super. I saw somebody predict that he was going to win like one or two of the next eight majors. I was like, I don't know if we need to like get carried away like that, but he's going to be problematic for people going into the next few years.
He is a machine. I mean, he's got that really slow backswing. He hits every like perfect position on the way back, and he just hits it so good. And I mean, again, if he was like an American 21-year-old player who'd done what he did, we'd be freaking out about him. But I think he just gets a little shortchanged because he's not American. But Everyone from the Korn Ferry Tour who's played with him is super impressed. He's a very controlled player, great ball striker. He's a machine. So definitely a bright future ahead of him.
Okay, Benny Ahn, former U.S. Amateur winner. We talked about the USAM earlier. He's a little older than you might think. I think he's 28. But he had a good President's Cup as well. Is there another level for him to kind of go up, or do you kind of think he is who he is at this point?
I would like to see a win. I mean, that's really the only thing. It's just he's been close a lot. He was close at Wyndham. He was close at Sanderson.
He was close at Memorial. Yeah.
He lost, I think, the Zurich in a playoff one year when Brian Stewart won it. So that's the next kind of thing for him is – you know, he won the BMW PGA over in England, which is the European Tour's big event. So he's won a big events, but that's really the next thing he needs to do is get a win, qualify for a tour championship. I think that's the next step for him.
Yeah, no, I agree on him. Okay, we're going to start going through these a little bit quicker. We've got some Korn Ferry guys and a couple of guys that played pretty well this fall that maybe people just weren't paying attention to. So we'll start with Brendan Todd, maybe the fifth best player in the world. Unbelievable fall. Is that a one-off? Do you expect him to have a good spring? What are your feelings on him right now?
I need to start this with the Brendan Todd story is probably the story of the fall. Like the guy went, I mean, he was at the depths and he just kept going, kept playing. I mean, his game was gone and he just kept at it. It's a great story about perseverance. It's why we love these kinds of stories. I do think the Brendan Todd thing, like we talk about guys who are short, like he is very short off the tee, like bottom 10 of the PGA Tour. So the two places that he did win, Bermuda and Mayakoba, were perfect golf courses for that. And so I do think that will be an inhibitor to his chances to contend in bigger events. I think, you know, could he win again? You know, at some, you know, your week-to-week tour events, I think so. He's a great putter. So when he gets hot with that, we saw what he can do. But I do think that, you know, it's not like Morikawa and those kinds of guys where we call them short when they're really just – they're still upper echelon. They just don't hit 340. He's a guy who's actually pretty short off the tee, and that will inhibit his ability on some of the bigger stages.
Yeah, I'm not buying Brendan Todd stock. I don't want to purchase Brendan Todd stock at its highest point. That doesn't mean I don't like him or I don't think he's good, but I can't imagine that – it feels a little I think I said this, but a little Jimmy Walker-ish or Patton Kizzire-ish where you're like, okay, yeah, good fall, get you into the Tour Championship, but – you know, I don't know how it's going to go in the spring and the summer. So I don't know. We'll see. Rick Gaiman, who has been hosting this podcast for the last few months, is maybe the biggest Scottie Scheffler fan in the world. Where do you stand on Scottie Scheffler?
I mean, this is a guy who he's a very quiet kid. I mean, literally just a man, a few words, if you will. But he is a guy who's been all everything, you know, forever. He was kind of like Spieth 2.0 in Dallas. Like he won the U.S. Junior when he was 16. Played in the Byron Nelson, played pretty well. I think he made a hole in one. Great career at Texas, played on Walker Cups, and then just came right out and, you know, blitzed the Corn Ferry Tour and was player of the year and could be rookie of the year now. So he's just a guy who I don't know why he hasn't quite gotten the attention of some of the other guys, but like he's just a guy that we've seen coming for a while now and he's doing it.
Yeah, he's got a great name too. I'm a big name guy and he's got a good one, but you're right. He hasn't gotten maybe some of the attention that he's deserved. Xinjun Zhang. This is somebody that my other podcast partner, Mark Immelman, is really big on. He was Xinjun was great on the Corn Ferry Tour last year. Do you think that translates to the PGA Tour this upcoming year?
I got to be honest. This is one I'm not familiar with. I think he's a little bit older. He's like 28, I think. So I think, you know, we'll see. He did not do much his first time around on tour. Obviously came back strong in the Corn Ferry, but I don't have a lot of Xinjun Zhang takes.
He's 32, by the way.
There we go. So yeah.
So he was on tour in 2018. He had 28 starts, one top 10, 16 miscuts, and finished 167th. In the FedEx Cup. He did win two times on the Corn Ferry Tour last year. So, you know, I think sometimes we don't really, I don't know, guys just, it just takes a while to figure stuff out. And even at an older age, you know, you look at his fall even, he had two top tens in the fall. He's already made almost double the money that he made last time out in 2018. So I think obviously he's having a better start to his PGA Tour season than in the only other one that he had. And hopefully he can keep it up. I think he's a pretty strong player. Harry Higgs, former teammate of Bryson DeChambeau at SMU. Don't know if he is on the weightlifting plan that that Bryson's on, but he played pretty well this fall. Do you have any thoughts on him?
He's a great personality. He did a video of the Corn Ferry Tour, did a Seinfeld spoof. So he's definitely a very fun player, a guy that, you know, people can root for. He took a couple years on Latino America to kind of get out there, went through the Corn Ferry. And, you know, he's just a guy, you see him a lot of times, you know, he's got like two buttons unbuttoned and, you know, shirt might be a little untucked. And he's just kind of one of the guys. So a very fun personality I think people enjoy rooting for.
Yeah,
he's probably the anti-Bryson, just that – I don't think he's like breaking out his calculator or his whatever for doing calculations out there on the course. I think he's probably a little bit more of a field player.
He finished second at the Bermuda, had three top 25s this fall. He's already made 540K for the season. So really good start to the fall for him. And then two others. I don't really love either of these guys in terms of their projection, but Lanto Griffin, who won the Houston Open this fall, and then Doc Redman, who former U.S. Amateur champ at Riviera. Doc Redman, do you have anything on those, either of those two guys?
Yeah, Lanto's an interesting one. Just, you know, he played 1 year on tour, didn't do much, and then went down to the Corn Ferry and went back up to the tour and found success like right away. I think rolled off like six or eight top 20s to start the season. And I don't know quite what the answer was or what he figured out. So it'll be interesting to see in, you know, 2020 if it's a guy who had a hot streak and capitalized, or if it's a guy who you know, figure something out. He's a bigger guy, kind of a power player. So I think that, you know, that could serve him well. But, I mean, definitely took a big leap this fall. And so I'd be curious to see where it goes.
Okay, we got a couple more. We've already done 19. We're going to go a little bit over 20 because there's a couple of guys that I want to throw at you just to get your thoughts. The first one for me, and this was a guy that, like, halfway through the year, I was like, wait a second, what? Bernd Wiesberger, 3 wins on the European Tour in 2019. He actually led the race to Dubai going into the final event. And he's up to 22nd in the world golf rankings. Like, him and Ricky Fowler are basically ranked the same in the OWGR. Is any of this surprising to you? Or are you like, yeah, that's kind of what I expected from Bernd in 2019?
I think the big rise in the world ranking is more because he took kind of a big dip. I remember years ago, Jason Solow predicted him as like the next Martin Keimer, kind of this quiet guy from Europe that, you know, would surprise people in the States. And if you remember, he was part of that. I think he was the 54-hole leader at that 2014 PGA of Valhalla.
And Rory just eviscerated him.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a guy that Europeans have known for a while. He's threatened to get on some Ryder Cup teams. But so I think that big rise is not from him coming out of nowhere per se, but instead of his career kind of hit a down patch, and now he's kind of back in the top 50 in the world and won a couple of Rolex events. So I think that's – it's not that he came out of nowhere. It's that he resuscitated his career.
Yeah. The tournaments that he won, I mean, he won a couple Rolex events. I think you just said that. It's not like – I think sometimes we do the European Tour thing where we're like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe he won in Portugal or whatever. He was winning, like, legit big-time events with really good players. So – I'm pretty impressed. I think the watch for him in 2020 is going to be, you know, can he qualify for the European Ryder Cup team? Because I think the position that they're in terms of captain's picks and stuff like that, is he's just not going to be a captain's pick because of some of the guys that are going to be on the fringe. But he could play his way on, you know, and I think that for him is the 2020 goal. Another guy who could qualify for the 2020 Ryder Cup, and this is somebody that we don't talk about at all, he's a 23-year-old, finished T6 at the Open Championship last year. He's up to 66 in the world golf rankings. That's Robert McIntyre, Bobby Mack from Scotland.
Yeah, so I did not know much about him, but actually he was on the GB&I side of the 2017 Walker Cup, which – 6 players on the U.S. side from that team are now on the PGA Tour just 2 years later, and the U.S. waxed them in that one. But he was actually on that GB&I team. And also, I did not realize, you know, you get some Europeans who go to some pretty random colleges, like Danny Willett went to Jacksonville State. Robert McIntyre is a McNeese State alumnus, which was, as I was digging into my Robert McIntyre facts, which they're not really exactly known for their golf program. So for a guy to go there, be a Walker Cupper, and then find pretty quick success on the European Tour is pretty incredible and not exactly the road you would expect.
Can you name any other McNeese State people?
No.
Not golfers, but anybody?
No.
I was going to go Steve McNair, but I think he was Alcorn State.
Yeah. Alcorn State.
I did not know Robert McIntyre went to McNeese State. By the way, your final leaderboard at Royal Portrush from the summer: Shane Lowry, Tommy Fleetwood, Tony Finau, Lee Westwood, Brooks Koepka, and then Robert McIntyre tied with Tyrrell Hatton, Danny Willett, and Ricky Fowler. I did not know that.
I do think – do you remember the thing with that Open that's a little squirrely is, and – I remember this as I was hanging out at, you know, with the locals of Shane Lowry's club well south of Portrush. But the weather got really nasty late, and so some guys went out early and posted and just watched the carnage from the clubhouse. I think he may have been one of those guys. I'm not positive, but, I mean, still finishing sixth in an Open, still very good.
Yeah, I think that's right. Danny Willett, I think, was in that – or was that on Saturday?
No, Saturday the weather was good because Lowry shot that 65 and they were celebrating like he'd already won the Open.
No, he shot a 63 on Saturday.
That's what I meant.
Okay, I'm going to throw – okay, so we've done – I think that's 21. I'm going to throw 5 names at you, and you don't have to talk about all 5. You can pick which one you talk about. So The other five names we have on here, Kurt Kitayama. We've got Shugo Imahara, your boy, your other boy. Corey Connors, Jazz Janawananon. I'm not even going to pause to see if I got that right. And then Lucas Beauregard. All these guys, for one reason or the other, kind of popped in 2019. And I'm curious to see if you think any of them are kind of have staying power going into 2020.
I am curious to see what Corey Connors does. He was top 20 in strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach. So basically an elite ball striker. Just everything around the greens was not – I mean, he was outside the top 120, I think, in both stats. And so he's got the – you know, he's got the ball striking chops to be a guy who's a consistent contender. And so I'm wondering if he can just clean it up around the greens and do that. The way he drives it, the way he hits it, he should be a guy who can make tour championships and that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see if he can fill that hole in his game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Connors is the one that probably pops the most. I thought Beauregard was awesome at the match play. He's just, I don't know. He was just super impressive. I don't think he did a ton the rest of the year, but he's still pretty young. So I'm interested to see kind of how his career goes, or kind of how the next few years play out for him as well. Again, with the Ryder Cup stuff coming up in 2020. So anybody else? Anybody we missed?
No, but I think kudos to Jazz. Actually, you know, he was a guy that people were talking about for the President's Cup after he kind of got into contention at Bethpage. And while the President's Cup was going on, he won on the Asian Tour, his third win of the year, and it got him to 45th in the world ranking. So that win probably got him his first Masters spot. So something you may have missed in the mayhem of the President's Cup finale was Jazz entering the top 50 of the world.
The President's Cup mayhem. Yeah, Beauregard didn't have another top 10 the rest of 2019 after that fourth place finish. Or I guess the semifinal finish at the match play. So I don't know. We'll see about him. But anybody else that we any like 11-year-olds that you've been scouting that we didn't talk about?
No. Can you look at my trusty list here? I think Matt Fitzpatrick's younger brother Alex is a guy that people have high hopes on. He played in the Walker Cup for GB&I this year.
Does he hit it like 220 also?
I think he's a little bit bigger player. Just out of nowhere shot at Matthew Fitzpatrick. Yeah, I think he hits it longer.
Fitzpatrick just I don't know. He doesn't do it for me.
And then Carl Phillips of Australia, he won the Southern Amateur, which is a pretty good size event at like age 15. He's a junior in high school, and he made the quarters of this year's USAM. So I think a lot of people have big expectations for him, and also has a fairly decent size YouTube following, I guess. I think it's at Koala Carl. Being Australian. Yeah.
You think or you I did research on this?
I'm not part of it. I've seen it mentioned in articles when he was playing well at the USAM. But I know Australians have big hopes for him.
Well, that's I love that you said I think his YouTube page is Koala Carl. like it
might be like Koala Carl 2. I don't know. Another Australian, Ryan Ruffles, while we're at it, got through Korn Ferry Q School. You know, he's a guy you saw get a lot of exemptions onto the PGA Tour, went down to Latino America, played well there, going to be on the Korn Ferry Tour next year. So he's kind of working his own way up through the system now. And another guy that people had high hopes for. I think he's still only like 22 years old. And so he could be a year away from getting on tour.
Yeah, those are good. Okay, good list. These have been our top players you need to watch for 2020 and beyond. If you agree, disagree, let us know in the comments. Leave us a review. Leave Rick a review, even though he's not here. And tell us who you think will break out in 2020. You can leave your thoughts in the review section of our podcast in Apple Podcasts. So, yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Sean, thanks for coming on. As always, we appreciate your time and hope you have a good holiday season, and hey, more late night golf coming up with Tournament of Champions, so that should be fun. Are you going to Hawaii?
I'm not. No. Okay, I'll be watching now.
So golf Twitter again. Let's do it. Let's get back together.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.